Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. We have news out of Washington, D.C. today that kind of strikes at the heart here when we talk. It was an airline accident, a tragedy, actually, and it involved a military helicopter and a regional, Canadian regional jet. 60-some victims, mid-air collision. There's a lot to kind of unpack there. We'll do that. Later on, I'm going to be speaking with a Lieutenant Colonel Campbell, a former U.S. Air Force retired. He's the author of a book called My Life Above the Clouds, and made a lot of flight hours, including that into Reagan Airport in Washington, D.C. And so he'll be joining us a bit later on. We're going to be speaking with Troy Downing, though, Montana's congressman, here in just a little bit, too, as we'll get up to date on this. And a few other things. The Lake and Riley Act has passed. We talked about the Water Compact being a big part of the St. Mary's rehabilitation. That'll be on the plate as well. And he's got some district trips and some business to carry and talk about here in Montana. So we have that today on Voices of Montana. Disturbing what has happened in Washington, D.C. regarding this air traffic accident. It was a helicopter, a Black Hawk helicopter, and a regional flight out of Canada. There's some notable people. Reported that a couple of, U.S. figure skating champions, Russian figure skating champions as well. There'll be a lot of fallout, I think, from this. And there's a little bit to learn. As I mentioned a bit later on, we will have a pilot, and it's a Lieutenant Colonel Campbell, U.S. United States Air Force, retired, lots of flight hours. And that including Reagan Airport, where this tragedy happened. So that to come here in just a little bit. It's a pleasure to welcome Troy Downing, Montana's Eastern District Congressman, as we had this opportunity to discuss this tragedy. And there's a lot of other things, as I mentioned, too. The Lake and Riley Act is now law. We'll go into that. That's one of Troy's first acts as well. And he's got other things on the plate that we'll get to, too. First, though, it will be Washington, D.C. and this tragedy. Good morning, Congressman. I know this is tough. Thank you for being here. I appreciate you.
Yeah, this is a tragedy, and I hope everybody takes a moment to just say a prayer for the families of the victims here. It kind of hit me in an awkward way, because I was just landing in Montana, coming back from D.C. and I got a bunch of text messages about it as I was taxiing in. So I hadn't, heard about it until I landed. And just absolute tragedy. I mean, for the victims on the on that regional jet, and then the military victims as well. And, I had a chance to look at some of the video of that happening. And, it's obviously hard to, and I don't want to speculate too much, but I will say one of the things, it looks like, the regional jet was on approach, and you could see the helicopter moving across. And an H-60. I mean, that was my airframe in the Air Force. Very similar. It's got really good upper visibility. It's got good visibility. But one of the things that happens that people may not be aware of is a lot of times when you're around other traffic, you're supposed to see and avoid. And air traffic control will, call out traffic for you. They'll say, like, you've got, traffic at, a mile at your 2 o'clock or something like that. And you'll respond whether you have them in sight or not. And you, of course, see and avoid as the pilot. But I also noticed there was another light in the sky. And so I'm just, this is total speculation, but, maybe they called the traffic and one or both of the pilots saw, another light and thought that's what was being, being identified and misidentified the traffic without seeing what was in front of them. And I mean, it's only speculation, but, whatever happened, I have, full faith that the NTSB is going to, investigate and come up with what happened and whether there's something we need to do differently to prevent such a tragedy happening in the future. But for now, I think it's best that we really focus on, you know, prayers for, you know, as much comfort as can be afforded to the, you know, the families of these victims, because it really is a tragedy.
Yeah, and I think that's all we can. Thanks for that update on that too. And we'll get into it a little bit more later on, as I talked about. But it is, and hearts are heavy when these things kind of happen, and they should be. People are affected in a grand way at about 67, including our military. You know, and Troy, you're a retired military officer as well. Thank you for that service. And as you noted too, that's where it strikes. So we'll leave it there, and we'll talk more about it here in just a little bit. You encouraged, and a lot of people, I think, are encouraged with the passage of the Laken-Riley Act. Now, we talked a little bit about it. This has to do with immigration, but it has to do with a criminal element of immigration, and it has pretty much widespread support.
I think it's really, it's common sense. I mean, if you're in this country illegally and you're found guilty of a crime, that should be automatic grounds for being deported. And that didn't happen. And unfortunately, we had the tragedy of the loss of Laken-Riley that, you know, that was really the battle cry of getting this passed. But I feel really good that we did this, because it's a common sense measure. If we have people that are here illegally and they're caught committing crimes, they shouldn't be released back into the public to do the same crime, or in this case, worse. So I was happy that we got that through the House. It came back from the Senate with some minor changes that actually broadened its scope, and it went to the president's desk, and I was really happy to see President Trump sign that.
Yeah. What does it do? I mean, it kind of give us the parameters of it. Does there need to be more done in this regard?
I think there is room to do this. You know, it was expanded a little bit when it first came through the House. It was very specifically focused on theft. Mm-hmm. And so that was expanded when the Senate brought it back to, you know, give it some, you know, broader broader coverage. But, you know, there's other laws that are coming to kind of fill those gaps. So we've got other laws that are being introduced and being voted upon and debated that give broader requirements for folks that are in the country illegally committing crimes. There was a, you know, crimes against women one. There was one that came to a vote past the House recently. But basically, if you were found guilty or admitted domestic abuse or violence against women, then that was something where you automatically were deported if you were here illegally. So there's a lot of stuff like that that is starting to go through as we start to make sure that we do exactly what the voters put us there for, is make sure that we're dealing with this, you know, surge of this southern border invasion, and make sure that we're protecting our communities, protecting, you know, our families, our kids, our women, our daughters, our everybody from, you know, from these crimes being committed by folks that aren't here legally, and making sure that they are being dealt with appropriately.
Montana Congressman Troy Downing is with us. It's Downing, DOWNING.house.gov for more information. Retired U.S. Air Force, Air National Guard as well. Talked about combat search and rescue missions, 8 years there, but also 2 tours of duty in Afghanistan. Again, thanks for your service there and continuing that public service. Going to go into a little more about this deportation because... And I've said it here too, and maybe not enough, because President Trump has enacted, and rather quickly, some moves regarding that. There's, you know, 10 to 20 million illegal immigrants in this country, and we have very little handle on who they are, and even right now where they are. And a big part of the president's plate is deportation, but that is going to cause some waves around. What's your sense? What's your sense of Trump's deportation plan, president's deportation plan, and maybe what kind of role Congress can play in that?
It's something that I spoke of often while campaigning. It's something that I heard from, you know, the folks when I was going into communities as a concern that, you know, we've been invaded at the southern border. And there's folks from all over the place. And it's not, you know, people try to put this into a silo that it's just, you know, Mexicans or it's just Guatemalans or it's just, you know, but it's everybody. It's not just, you know, financial refugees. These are, you know, cartel members that are starting to set up camp in Montana, you know, drug dealers. These are human traffickers. But the part that should really give everybody pause is they're not just South and Central Americans that are crossing at that southern border. It's, military age men from, countries that we don't have the best relationships with. And so if we've got, you know, Chinese nationals, if we've got Middle Eastern, if we've got, West Africans, we got all these folks that are coming across that border and disappearing into our communities, and we have no idea who they are or what they're capable of. So I think we really need to focus on, you know, why they're here and whether they have, nefarious intentions, you know, against us. And so just the scale of it is, you know, daunting. But I think that what we've been doing, and I'll say the low-hanging fruit, for lack of a better word, of focusing on those who have committed, you know, another crime, because obviously they committed a crime coming here illegally, you know, just that fact is of course a crime. But it's easier to identify somebody when they're, you know, arrested for something else, like, you know, the bill that I just mentioned, you know, domestic violence or violence against women. That is something that makes it really easy to identify and start dealing with that. And so as we continue to pass laws that codify what President Trump ran on, and that the voters, you know, they spoke loud and clear, this is what we want, I think we're going to start chipping away at that. It's not an easy task. It's not a small task, but it's a necessary task. And we need to make sure that we are doing what we were elected to do and protect the people of this nation against folks that we have no idea where they came from, why they're here, or what they plan on doing.
You know, and Congress will be called on to respond in different ways to this as well. This is coming from the executive branch, so to speak. But, with the power of the purse and things like that, Congress will have a role to play in this deportation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about that real briefly, because obviously what's making the news right now are all of these executive orders that are coming out of the White House. And, you know, people have different feelings about executive orders on whether they're, you know, excessive or reasonable or not. But I will say what Trump is doing is he is delivering on his campaign promises as these in the form of these executive orders. And that is somewhat fungible, because a future administration can obviously do executive orders as well to undo. So what we really see our duty in Congress is to start codifying these in laws, so it's not just at the whim of a future administration, so that we can actually put these into law, so that it's not simply an executive order. And so a lot of that is being looked at right now on how we can codify these promises to the American people and really the voters who came out so overwhelmingly in support of these policies. We need to make them law, not simply executive orders.
Montana Congressman Troy Downing is with us. A bit later on, we will speak with an airline pilot, 37 years with Delta, 21 years in the United States Air Force, Lieutenant Colonel Alan Campbell, and we'll talk more about some of the parameters that might have caused this tragedy in Washington, D.C. this morning early. It was before 7 o'clock Mountain Time, a military Black Hawk helicopter and a Canada Air regional jet collided midair, 67 souls lost. Troy had talked about that earlier, and then Lieutenant Colonel Campbell will join us here in just a bit. And back to Troy Downing, not in Washington, D.C. He's got some events out and meetings here in the district. We'll get to that. Troy, again, thanks for being on here. I appreciate
Happy
that.
To be here.
Wanna, you've introduced some legislation, kind of a carryover. You look at your committee positions, your House Financial Services Committee. That's an A-list committee, by the way, and rather rare for freshmen. And then the Small Business Committee, and that's important for Montana too. What was your first experience like when, from that personal standpoint, because if people know your story, they know that you grew up kind of like J.D. Vance in a certain way. And then you find yourself on the House floor first time addressing the nation and your lawmaker colleagues there. What was that like for you personally?
Well, there's so many angles to that question. I mean, I just want to say, first of all, you know, I was as you know, the unplanned pregnancy of an unwed teenage mom had basically nothing, no special, family connections, no money, no anything, but I was successful because of the opportunities that I had as an American. And the fact that my mom, kept me and raised me, and I had that opportunity, that success. And then 3 weeks ago, she was in D.C., in the gallery above the House floor, watching me get sworn into Congress. I mean, God bless America.
Yeah.
So it really, really, really warms my heart to know that you can do that still in the United States of America. And then to move forward, the first time I spoke on the floor, the gravity, the weight of everything that's happened in the history of this great nation, and to now be part of that and be able to address the House about things that are important to you. I mean, not just on the House floor, and some of it was fun, like when the rodeo team was supposed to be out at the inaugural parade in D.C. for the inauguration. So that was just fun. But something much more meaningful is being able to testify in the Ways and Means Committee. So that's the committee that deals with our tax policy, and talk to them about how tax policy affects our agricultural community. And one of the things that's coming up for renewal is the death tax, the estate tax. And a lot of folks say, well, we need to keep that in. That's just rich people trying to not pay their fair share. And I explained to Ways and Means, no, this is multi-generational farms and ranchers that, are land rich and are probably squeaking by with all of their equipment debt and input costs and everything else they need to do to put food on our tables. And I said, it's not just about preserving those families and those economic drivers in my district, in my state, but if we lose the ability to feed ourselves, we fail as a country. That's one of the biggest, national issues that we have in terms of protecting this nation. And throughout the history of humanity, the way you bring a country down is make it so it can't feed itself. So I was really honored to be able to testify in front of Ways and Committees. Ways and Means Committee, and talk about the importance of tax policy in maintaining our ability to grow food.
Do you how did they receive that message?
I think it was received really well. Actually, Chairman Jason Smith sent me a nice message thanking me for bringing that up, and I think it was well received. And I think I've got a lot of advocates that see it that way and agree. So I think we're going to be able to preserve that, which is obviously very, very meaningful in making sure that we keep production agricultural land in production with Montana families. So I'm pretty excited about
that. Yeah, thank you for that, too. I encourage people to measure their words. And especially, when you're on the House of the floor, when you see all that history, and when you see how important it is for the lives of Americans, talk about the weight of your words and how you try to, express them so that your fundamentals are expressed, but also the compassion and the empathy that needs to be expressed in those.
Well, yeah, you're trying to get a point across. You want to make it really clear on what the implications are and why you're advocating. And really, passing laws is about convincing your peers that this is good policy, that they want to get on board and support, and you wanted them to understand why. And so, I'm very passionate about it. When it's things that, matter to my constituents, to my state, to my country, I'm very passionate about it because I believe in this country, I believe in this state, and I'm honored beyond anything I can express on having the ability to have that seat at the table. It's not lost on me.
Yeah, thank you for that, too. Another piece of important legislation out there is the Water Compact. You and the delegation in Montana had gotten together. There was a slate of bills that you have introduced to support Montana's tribal communities.
Yeah, and that's thank you for bringing that up. It goes to the Crow Revenue Act that is making sure we protect those jobs at Signal Peak and making sure that we're doing right by that community as well, by the Crow Indians, as well as, Fort Belknap, and making sure that we get their water compact through and make sure that we're dealing with the infrastructural failures on the Milk River watershed and the, St. Mary's siphon. Because it's, and that goes beyond, helping these native communities, these reservations, the helping an Indian country, those are irrigators all along the High Line. And again, it goes back to my thesis about making sure we can continue to feed people. If we don't get that infrastructure dealt with appropriately and those irrigators can't irrigate, again, we're risking putting them out of business. And if they go out of business, who knows if that ever comes back? We need to make sure that we're doing everything we can to support not just our constituents in Indian country, but also all of the non-native communities that depend on that stuff going through.
Yeah, and this one's not over the finish line yet either.
It's not. But I think you're going to see all four of us in the Montana delegation advocating very strongly on behalf of that. And I think that that is I think we're going to get a win here, and I'm very very bullish on that, and I plan on doing everything I can to advocate for it.
Yeah, thanks. I got a couple more questions here, and let's talk about the districts. In speaking with you shortly after the election on the air here, you said we were gonna get busy in the early part of the session, and you guys have. And if I'm not mistaken, this might be your first opportunity to get back to the district.
It is, because a lot of the stuff that we've done this last month, from being sworn in on the 3rd to we had some foundational meetings on setting up our committees. We've had orientation for freshman members of the 119th, and we just got back from a Republican issues conference meeting where we got together on dealing or talking about how we're going to deal with reconciliation and budget and all the spending bills and make sure that we can, get some wins when we need to. I mean, we've got a timeline coming up, and we need to, get everybody in lockstep rowing in the same direction so that we can get these wins that we all campaigned on and promised and actually are, absolutely integral to maintaining the republic, because we've got a huge spending problem that we need to reel back. So those were all really good meetings. And then I got back into district last night. I started this morning at 7 a.m. with hometown Helena. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be meeting with the county commissioner in Lewis and Clark County. I'm going to meet with the mayor. Then tomorrow I'll be in Billings. Going to meet with Bob Wilmoth, Rocky Mountain College. Going to meet with Dog Tag Buddies, just making the rounds. And then in Rosebud County, talking to the mayor of Colstrip, and going to go take a look at Westmoreland, understanding how important that is to not just that local community, but to our state and to our energy policy. So, I'll be all over the district until we get back into session, I think, on Tuesday.
Yeah, those are invaluable, I know, because you get information, and good information leads to good decisions, which hopefully lead to good policy. I got less than a minute here. It's probably not enough time, but one of your first acts, in fact, it was your first act, the Federal Insurance Office Elimination Act. What does that do?
Well, here's the thing. The Federal Insurance Office it was created under Dodd-Frank, which I think was a misguided package of policies there. But it was created to basically represent the U.S. insurance market, but it's really clear that insurance is not commerce, doesn't fall under the Interstate Commerce Clause, and falls upon the states. So I asked myself, why are we paying to keep an agency alive that has no reason to exist when it's really clear that we have a state-based regulatory system in this country? So I thought that was a good DOGE bill of getting rid of an agency that is, been used by the Biden administration to promote, climate alarmism. And let's just get rid of it and stop paying for it. It has no reason in this country where that regulation should fall upon the states.
Give my best to Heather and your mom. And thank you so much, Troy, for public service and being on today.
Anytime. Thanks for the opportunity. And as you said before, if people have questions, just downing.house.gov is our website. Our contact's all on there.
Thanks to Congressman Troy Downing from Washington, actually from Helena, as he just flew in this morning and already around the district for joining with us here earlier. As I mentioned, with this tragedy, and I know Troy addressed it in Washington, D.C., 67 souls lost, 64 on a Canada Air regional jet, and three soldiers on a Black Hawk helicopter. And there's still a lot to be unpacked here and a lot unknown about it. But some of the difficulties of getting into, Ronald Reagan Washington National Airport there, especially when you look at where the Capitol is and restricted airspace and That might have played a part in that. As I mentioned earlier, it's a pleasure to welcome our next guest here. He's Lieutenant Colonel Alan Bullitt Campbell, a U.S. Air Force retired, United States Air Force retired, and author of a book called My Life Above the Clouds. He's got 21 plus years and 3,000 hours in flight for the Air Force and Florida National Guard, and then 37 years with Delta Airlines. That's 20,000 flight hours. And good morning, Lieutenant Colonel Campbell. Thank you for being here. That's a lot of time in the air, sir. Again.
Yes, it is a lot. Yes, it is, and I'm sorry we're under these circumstances because this is just horrible.
Yeah. What are your initial thoughts on this?
Well, I've flown into that airport I don't know how many times, and it's so restrictive because you have the White House, you have the Pentagon, you have the Capitol, and you have to go up the river to land. So they're focused on landing, and then you have other airplanes taking off or following them, so there's a lot going on. And so to expect them to see a Black Hawk helicopter at 9 o'clock at night is just not possible. And they couldn't have avoided it anyway. It's just it's an unusual circumstance, but it's just a bad situation.
Thank you. I had it was actually last night. I think earlier I said it was this morning, but it did happen 8:47 PM on Wednesday. What do you think led into this? As much as we know right now.
Right, as much as we know, because I know an awful lot's going to get uncovered, but the commercial airplane has the number one priority. They have passengers, and it's a complicated airport, and they're in line, and they're doing their sequence, and they have to watch the airplane taking off to make sure the runway is clear. So their ability to look out left and right and see a black helicopter is just about impossible. And then to avoid it, if their approach speed, flaps down, gear down, close to the ground, their ability to avoid a collision would be minimal. And so it's just a horrible situation. And the odds of that happening are like winning the lottery. That just is so rare. So it will all be uncovered in the future. But I just have a feeling that the helicopter was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And, we'll just have to know the rest of the circumstances later on.
Yeah, what's the normal protocol in that regard? As you noted,
the commercial airplane is number one. It has the priority. The helicopter can stop and hover. So the air traffic control is going to say, "Okay, hold your position. Okay, now you're cleared," and then they'll scoot across. But for the helicopter to hit an airplane, and think about it, the airplane had all of its external lights on. So it's extremely visible. The helicopter is black. It's just about impossible to see. And if they'd seen it, they probably couldn't have avoided it anyway. So it's just a really, really bad set of circumstances. The helicopter should have stopped, hovered, waited for his clearance, and then scooted across. And I'm sure air traffic control is very much involved in that, and a lot will be uncovered about communication, who was talking to who, and, they'll have to uncover all of that.
Lieutenant Colonel Alan Bullitt Campbell is with us, retired United States Air Force, a lot of flight hours with the Air Force, the military, and 37 years with Delta Airlines. Again, familiar with that airport in Washington, D.C. So what do you think then could have happened? Or as people will look at this, they'll go, we need this restriction here, or we need this change there. What are your thoughts regarding how you avoid this?
Well, they have everything in place. If it had been during daylight, it probably would have been easily avoidable, but it's at night. And you have lights all over Washington. You think about the various things these pilots are looking at. Well, things can just get blended in with all of the other lights. So they may have told the helicopter to avoid a certain airplane. He might have been looking at the wrong airplane. Those things will be uncovered, I think, once they do all of the communication information and all the recording devices off of the airplane, that will be uncovered. But it was just a huge mistake. There should have been a sequence, commercial airplane first, helicopter hold, okay, now's your clearance. And it probably happens every day. It's probably a routine operation in that area.
And do you think there are anything, immediately that needs to be done? I know that they've got that airspace, or maybe it's open now. They restricted it since last night.
It's probably open because that's such a important airport, and there's so many things that go on in that area. I'm sure it's opened. It's the military airplane that would have the most flexibility. They could probably send it in a different direction, or because the commercial airplane, I mean, it has to go down the river and land at Reagan. So it does not have that many options. It can't go right, it's over the Pentagon. It can't go left, it's over the White House. So they're very restricted in what they can do. And at that speed and configuration, their ability to avoid a collision is virtually impossible. 400 feet above the ground, just a really bad situation.
Do you know how many flights go in and out of Ronald Reagan Airport?
You know, I couldn't even guess, but yeah. They're constant. It's just, I don't know if there's a time delay. Maybe they shut it down at midnight. I have no idea. But during the day, it's extremely busy airport. That's just the way it is. People have complained about its location. But the other airport in the Washington area are far out, very distant. So it's very unique to be that close to all the stuff happening in the Washington area. So it's just a really bad circumstance.
Author also of a 2023 book, My Life Above the Clouds, that talks about all those flight hours. Again, Lieutenant Colonel Campbell is with us here. Let's talk about your book a little bit. You know, what have you learned? What was your life like above the clouds?
You know, that's what's so impressive, because I keep telling people that I'm just a regular guy. I'm not somebody special. But when I got into aviation, it just worked for me. And that's why I wrote the book, because I want other normal people to read it and go, you know, look at the options. You don't have to be special. You don't have to be unique. You don't have to be a celebrity. Just stay off of drugs and work hard and stay out of jail, you know, just keep a decent life, and then decide what you want to be when you grow up and go for it. And so that's why I wrote the book. I want people to read it and the light bulb to come on that says, gosh, if he did that, he's pretty normal. I could do that too.
Well, you started at a young age, didn't you? I mean, if I look at all this time in the military, then also in commercial flight, what were you, 12?
No, I mean, I graduated from high school and went to the Citadel, but something like the Citadel or the military academies, you want to graduate with your class. So you don't take 6 months off. You don't delay it. You graduate in 4 years. And I went right into the Air Force and did 4 years in the Air Force and then went to Florida, Jacksonville, Air National Guard. And so I kind of overlapped my 21 years in the military with my 37 with Delta. And in the meantime, I flew a private airplane, did air shows and acrobatics. And the book covers all of that about what a unique life and what a great country. You can't do that in many places on this earth. That you can pull that off here is awesome.
Yeah. I like that fact, too. And we do have opportunities, and they are out there, and people do have to grab them. What's your advice for somebody who's, you know, maybe young or even not so young and thinking about, I've always wanted to fly? How long does it take to kind of get that done?
My folks bought me a little bit of flying time so I could try it when I was in high school. And it worked for me. I got 10 hours, but click, you know, I knew that's what I wanted to do. I knew I had the aptitude. I didn't, you know, fail or dislike it or whatever. So I just had to wait till I could get in the military and pursue it. But I am very fortunate because of my size, 20/20 vision, ambidextrous. Not everybody has that, and not everybody likes it. You try flying and you don't like it, have a plan B, have a plan C, go do something else. And so that's why I wrote the book, so people could think about that and go, you know, I hadn't thought about that. You get arrested and kind of goof up your life, then you might affect all of that stuff. Live a clean life and then go after it. It's just incredible what you can accomplish in this country.
Ever had any close calls that made you go, rethink things?
You know, that's what's so stunning about all of this. I flew for 40 plus years and I had so many flights, but so few dangerous situations. Nothing in the airline, never even had a flat tire, never lost an engine. Very few in the military, which is much more risky. I had a bunch in civilian flying, but some of that was on me and just the circumstance, and it's all in the book. But, you know, a lot of that, you've got to be good, but you've also got to be lucky. And I can't say enough about that.
Are you still flying?
I still have a license. I still can fly, but it's too expensive. You know, if I want to go out and rent an airplane, it's kind of hard to explain that. Been there, done that, so to speak. So I could, but I don't.
Do you, when you, then if you're traveling as a passenger, do you try to invite yourself into the cabin?
I usually do. I like to go up and talk to them and just introduce myself and that sort of thing. And I hate to say it, but it's also a security thing because I've got good vision. If something's going bad in the airplane, I'm going to know probably ahead of some other people. And so I want the pilots to know that I'm in the back. I can fly. If they need some help, call me and let me know.
Gotcha.
I tell the flight attendants that, oh, I'm not bragging or anything, but I just want them to know that if they need help, call me.
Yeah. Hey, thank you for sharing that with us here today, too. And any final thoughts on this? How long do you think it'll take to try to get some answers and then not only get some answers, but to find appropriate responses?
I think the answers will be very quick. They probably already know there was some huge mistakes made, and there's going to be some, analysis of that and how do we fix it and what did we do wrong and that sort of thing. It'll take a while for the information to actually come out because it's very, very involved. But this was just so avoidable and so unnecessary and so tragic for all the people that were personally involved in it. And so, they'll do the learning curve. They'll talk through all of this and make some changes in their procedures there. But as the pilots, you just got to really be paying attention and be aware that this could always happen and you need to avoid it.
Yeah. Thanks again for sharing that with us. The book is My Life Above the Clouds, Lots of Hours Above the Clouds, Lieutenant Colonel Alan Campbell, United States Air Force, retired. Thanks, Alan. I appreciate that. And thanks for your service, too.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.